You're listening to Neural Pathways, where your neuroscience degree can take you, presented to you by Healthy Brains, Healthy Lives at McGill University. I'm your host, Rana Ghaffouri, and I'm here with McGill alumni to help you find your postsynaptic potential and figure out what to do after your graduate studies in neuroscience. For this week's episode, I'm talking to Xu Fei, who completed a master's in neuroscience at McGill in 2013 and is currently an outreach scientist at Code Ocean. So Xu, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Rana, thank you for inviting me here.
Can you tell me a bit about your position at Code Ocean?
Yeah, I am an outreach scientist working with Code Ocean. And Code Ocean is a reproducibility and a collaboration tool for computational scientists. Researchers, and my role involves training people with computational reproducibility concepts, best practices, speaking with scientists in all sorts of backgrounds, and to understand how they work with computational tools in general, and how we can take the feedback back to the product team with engineers and designers to reiterate our product to make their work easier and make sharing and collaborating more convenient, so that they can benefit from our product and in general. As we are a startup, we actually have very flexible roles within the company. So in addition to these activities, I'm also involved with tasks in either marketing content and all sorts of things that I guess an early startup that would require me to do. Also write tutorials, also training maybe at universities as a workshops for students so that they can be equipped as early as possible in their career with a more forward-thinking and forward-looking kind of best practice so that they can be more established once they become an academic practitioner or professional. And none of these things were available when I was a graduate student trying to learn how to code. So I feel like these are the things that are quite interesting, and it's quite fortunate to be in this era also to be involved with anything that's computational in nature or use any computational tools.
Oh, I totally agree. I'm actually trying to learn how to code right now, and it's...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a really useful tool, especially in our like neuroscience field. It's really helpful for a lot of things. Yeah. So you said you mentioned it's a startup. Mm-hmm. So how have your career goals changed throughout the course of your studies since this didn't exist when you were a graduate student? What did you imagine yourself doing, and why did you choose to pursue this instead?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was a student, I guess I really didn't think too much about what I was going to do after graduation. I thought about a PhD program, I would say probably not for too long, and eventually realized that maybe I don't want to do a PhD. There are quite a few options out there. I was working before that in the brain imaging company, and that's one of the reasons that I actually came to the IPN. Was through the boss of the company, the founder, Doug Arnold at the MNI. And from working in the company to the program to understand a bit more of the science and maybe the whys and the hows to study multiple sclerosis. That's our subject of interest. And then after that, I was quite curious. Maybe the IPN program is so diverse that I was curious about a lot of other things as well. So I took a detour and from academia into various industries, from like international NGOs, government, to small private companies, to larger companies. And I realized that working with startups is something that I feel just, I think it's a lot more satisfying. It is a lot more uncertain for sure, but I feel like I'm learning quite a lot and finding a founding team that is more mission-driven and value-driven. I think it just speaks to me. It's you know, today's day and age, it's not something that we can just go with the company and be happy with it. I guess people are a lot more complicated than before. It's not just finding a job will satisfy anyone. And I feel like, yeah, I can find a job in places, but we want to be valuable and feel satisfied with our decisions. And so this startup is actually one of the rare startups I feel like is very mission driven and has a good cause. And yeah, I feel like it's a really good choice.
Right. And you're more a part of actually creating something rather than just falling into a role that already exists, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how did you end up actually finding this role at CodeOcean?
That's very interesting. So I think the direct link was through a volunteer position that I had with the Carpentries. Have you heard of the Carpentries?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's a very inspiring organization created by computer scientist and educator Greg Wilson. He really inspired a lot of people, including myself. And there was originally called Software Carpentries. So we actually volunteer to teach grad students how to code. So basically, it's a boot camp kind of an educational workshop. And so I volunteered for them for a number of years. And at some point last year, I was enrolled in the startup school offered by the Y Combinator from Silicon Valley. And I was in the cohort of fall 2018 with one of my co-founders. And I think at some point, things didn't quite work out. And I was literally fired from the founding team. And on that day, I just felt, well, you know, that's kind of disappointing. I was really feeling down. And I just wanted to take a look at the job market. I was like, I might as well look for a job. And I found a post and an email from the mailing list from the Carpentries asking anyone interested in this post to do scientifically relevant work. Serving researchers and with a startup. So I thought it was, it's interesting. It could be one of the options. But then, you know, later as we talked more, and I feel like this is just a lot more interesting opportunity than any other options that I had at that point. So I continued with them.
What's your favorite part of the job, do you think?
I guess the question is probably, to me, I would think about the two aspects of it. Number one is a favorite part of a startup job. And here I get to solve problems with people at quite a flat structure. So it's not too many hierarchies that will have to really reach to the founder or the CEO to get a discussion or something. And so you can get things moving relatively fast and you can see results and you can take feedback and see results in the actual service or product very quickly. And you see the impact made really quickly. That's one thing. And the second thing is that this is a special startup because it's founded by researchers, for researchers. So I think my time at McGill at the IPN probably gave me enough training so that I appreciate this kind of workflow and this population of people. So it's not we're serving, I guess, some kind of random app user or some marketing ad company clients or something. So I feel like I really like the users and our clients, the people that we're serving. And I feel like it's quite fulfilling as well.
Right. So your time as a researcher in academia inspired you to pursue this role in a way. So even though you're not staying in academia, it's still a really useful part of your background for it. Speaking of your time at the IPN, can you tell us a little bit more about your experience doing your master's and your research project?
Yeah. That was a while back. Okay. My experience in general is it's quite good. So I was at the MNI at the Brain Imaging Center doing MR spectroscopy in patients with multiple sclerosis and also sleep apnea. And so I was doing a bunch of things at the time. So we're doing MRI scans. I basically was part of the whole process of getting people into the scanner and acquire the images and eventually take the brain imaging pipeline and process it and look at the results and apply a bunch of techniques and statistics.
You mentioned the Carpentries, but what other extracurricular or non-academic activities did you do during your graduate studies?
Okay, so first of all, the Carpentries I only discovered towards the end of my grad school. We're struggling with learning how to code, and it was not easy. Like today, you can just find an online course, top quality for free. There was really not much. It was like basically manuals you can read and very simple HTML tutorials. So I wasn't involved with the carpentry. I wish I had known them earlier. I actually participated in quite a few things. There was the student association, the GSAN.
The Graduate Student Association for Neuroscience.
It's neuroscience, yeah. So I think I was organizing sports events for mm-hmm. people, and also the the Brain Awareness Week. There was the Scientific Cafe, that the events that we organized to get people to get together, I guess, from the public. And talk about neuroscience and the impact on society and the kind of things. I was part of the McGill Outdoors Club, so MOC. And that was really, I think, eye-opening to see like what people can do there. And I was a volunteer climbing instructor.
So you go hiking or?
Yeah, orientation, new student orientation. So there's like the Frosh Week that people do on campus, but we do that in the mountains. Yeah, all sorts of outdoor activity. So that was a really, really good experience and really fun people.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. How do you think your roles in these activities benefited you or may have helped you in your career?
Yeah, so if anything I can think of today is one of these things that people tend to call soft skills. And I feel like when I was a science student, we tend to interact with only scientists.
Science students, yes.
Yeah, science students. And that is not true of the world. It was like a very biased sample that we interact with. And I realized that the more I get used to interact with a certain type of people, the less I'm flexible and open to, I guess, different kind of people. And then sometimes maybe just my personal thing, I feel like I need to just talk with people in different backgrounds. And I think in the work condition, in the work environment, it's very much like that. These kind of skills probably benefit from my extracurriculars a lot more than the academic analytical thinking and technical coding, this kind of stuff. Because at the end of the day, I'm not a professional software developer that talks to machines 100% of the time. And I do code and I do, you know, these kind of technical work, but a lot of times I'm communicating with a human and my work benefits humans, and I need to really establish this kind of human-human interaction.
So what other types of jobs or fields of work do you think could benefit from having a background in neuroscience research?
So I guess I would say, in two aspects. One is the technical aspects of the job. So technical track, the direction of either coding or in the actual research, by either being academia or in industry. The other one is the non-technical roles. So in technical roles, I would definitely think of the current hot trending AI that's directly applicable based on the skills that we all learned in the computational coding, and if that's part of the job, that the part of the work that you need to do for your degree, statistics, these kind of things, and there's no shortage of these kind of demands in, you know, all over the world. And regarding the non-technical job, and I would say that this kind of training is beneficial in terms of its analytical rigor. And I think there's a lot of theories and research results that we can take from neuroscience and how decisions are made, or how do we deal with uncertainty, this kind of stuff.
If a current neuroscience graduate student is interested in working at a startup related to coding, let's say, what do you think that they should do now during their graduate studies to help them prepare for such a career?
I would say if they're interested in working with any tech startups, yeah, definitely get the portfolio out. In industry, like today, if you tell people that you have experience in certain things, you got to show them what you did. And these are all basically out there in the open. Like people will use websites like GitHub to host your projects. Right. So it's almost like if you're a craftsman, you got to show like what you can craft. A coder
like an art portfolio.
Exactly like an art portfolio. So like these are your coding projects. You got to show them. You got to tell people and put them, open source them so that they can actually look at and evaluate you quickly. So I would encourage to you know, anyone who even just learning from day one to put your code out there. You know, people who are going to criticize you, if they're right, then you got to learn from it. And if they're not right, well, just ignore them. It's fine.
That's good advice.
Yeah. And maybe with just more look out to what your peers are doing. There are a lot of people talented people within McGill community. They're doing really cool stuff. And if we're just bury our heads in the inside of the lab and doing stuff really intensely and then never share anything until the publication, it's a high risk route, I would say. It's because you know, stuff you'll never really make it out there successfully. A lot of times it's not up to you, even if you're—
And you don't have the chance to get feedback and improve on it, I guess, right?
Exactly. And startups is all about, I would say probably it's a cliche term, but what I hear enough and what I experience enough is you want to fail early and fail fast. So if you want to do something, get it out there and collect some feedback.
So to wrap up, what is the number one piece of advice you would give to yourself if you could go back to when you were a trainee?
Give it to myself. Okay, that's fair enough. Because usually I'm hesitant to give advice to people, and that assumes that you know what you're talking about.
That's fair.
I would say that try to learn more skills to know myself. I think that's a lot more worthwhile of my investment in learning, because this thing will matter to me in the future a lot more than any other tangible hard skills. And these are the things that are also trainable skills that I just did not believe in when I was in grad school. Things more about mindfulness and awareness. And these are the skills that takes a long time to develop. And it's always good to start early.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. As always, if you want more information about Shufei and Code Ocean, check out the Neural Pathways website for more resources. Listening to today's episode of Neural Pathways. This podcast is presented by Healthy Brains, Healthy Lives, so don't forget to visit our website. It's mcgill.ca/HBHL and follow HBHL on Twitter at HBHLMcGill. If you never want to miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. See you next time!